Okay, thank you for participating in the Library Act Commemoration Project. I'd like to thank Susan Grant for giving her thoughts about the past and present public library events. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you for inviting me.
Can you remember libraries when you were a child?
Very much so. My parents were immigrants and had very little English. Libraries became my English language school. From books and libraries, I learned vocabulary about the Australian way of life and colloquialisms. I can't imagine how I would have acquired this knowledge had I not had the resource of the public library. Libraries in those days were very traditional. It was a short loan period. Silence was observed. And when I moved back to Newcastle, I had no qualifications, so the libraries had always been a big part of my life, so I focused on libraries.
In those days, information was harder to acquire, so the libraries would have had an importance
there. Very much so. Libraries were free. Libraries were free, so they were part of everyone's life. Money in my childhood didn't seem to be, there wasn't as much disposable income. People seemed to allocate their budget to different priorities. So a free library service was an enormous resource for families, especially in the day when three was a small family. We were three children, that's a small family. Many families with six children, eight children. Imagine trying to buy books from a very limited disposable income from that budget. No, libraries were an enormous resource for families in those days, especially coming from my background, a migrant background, where parents were struggling to assist their children with the acquisition of the English language because they didn't have it themselves. And it's funny because my parents had absolutely no idea what literature I was reading, and it wasn't until I went to the library with a neighbour when I was in my early teens that she saw me borrowing Harold Robbins, and she said, "Does your mother know you're reading that?" I had no problem with it. It was a book, it was a story, and I was enjoying it. Perhaps I was a little naive at the time and didn't realise that it was probably, in her mind, R-rated.
So you could share some of the knowledge that you learned with your parents.
Yes.
Moving on to our next question. Can you describe what your local library was like?
Well, initially, where we lived in Birmingham Gardens, I had no access. I was too small to have access to the public library, which was at Wall's End. I was too small to ride my bike there. It was 3.7 kilometres from home. So a neighbour, and this is an incredible scenario, but it was quite common, started a library in her front room and charged us to borrow books. And this was quite a common scenario in the community. So it may have only been a small amount. Perhaps you got three books for a penny or something like this, but you borrowed from your neighbour's front room. I still remember that. Then, when I was old enough to reach the pedals on my sister's bike, I could pedal 3.7 kilometres to Wall's End Library and use the public library. Funnily enough, that Wall's End Library stayed there in its original condition until the new one was built only a few years ago. I still remember it well. But the absolute joy of walking into that free public library to me was a goldmine. I don't know whether all people have the same reaction to literature that I had even as a child, but when I read about it in my adult life, I read characters in books who had this enormous love of books and literature in their youth. I relate to it tremendously. That it was so important to me to have that access, so important. And again, I hark back to the fact that my immigrant parents were not able to help me with any projects or schoolwork either. So the library again proved to be my access point for any information I needed. Unfortunately, in the day, I don't think librarians were the professional information retrieval specialists that they are today. And it was more a case of perhaps a person who was interested in reading, who stood behind the desk and just marked in and out. And it was very much a scenario where you had to learn yourself. You had to learn where to find information yourself, because I don't believe that they were trained professionals. However, they were very, very welcoming.
Okay, so if you had a school project to ask, would they say, I'll take you down to the science section and find that book for you? Or would
no,
they just...
I don't believe so. I don't know that they had that sort of expertise. But certainly, because they shelved books, they would know that 500 was the number for science. But after that, you were basically on your own. I know that a lot of children were able to borrow those books and take them home to their parents. But I took them home. Fortunately, I had an older sister who helped me a lot. But I took them home and went through them myself. Hence, developed enormous capacity for research, even at a young age.
Mm.
Yeah.
What did you like most about your library?
Again, it was just a cornucopia of literature. It's hard to explain because I was so young at the time. I was probably 7 or 8 when I was cycling down to Walls End Library, and it was just the joy of getting lost in Madeleine in Paris's story, or some other book that transported me somewhere else. But also, perhaps subconsciously, I didn't realise this, but also teaching me the basis, giving me the foundation for my English that's carried me through to adult life.
That's right. Yeah. Very good. Is there anything that didn't quite work out at the library that you didn't quite like, or was a bit daunting? Or was it just...
Not really. I suppose my only frustration was the limits on the number of books you could borrow. I believe, and I may be wrong, but in those days you had a ticket, X number of tickets, and you could only borrow by ticket. You swapped a ticket for a book. I believe that was the scenario. I had a little pocket and I had perhaps 6 cards in it, 2 for non-fiction and 4 for fiction. I'm making this up as I go. But I believe that my frustration was that I couldn't have more.
Right.
I understand in those days, I assume like everyone, the budget for libraries would not have been huge. So the Newcastle City Council would have allocated quite a small portion of their budget to libraries for their book stock.
Yeah. Favourite reading material?
I have very eclectic taste. I'll read anything. I won't read poor quality literature. I've never wasted my time with anything poorly written. And again, I hark back to when I was a child and developed a really good sense of vocabulary, strong characters, etc., well thought out plots. I think I always knew what a good book or a well-written book was. And in adulthood, I refused to waste my time on something poorly written. But I must admit, I have difficulty with sci-fi fantasy. Although I have become involved in Game of Thrones recently. But sci-fi fantasy, I have found difficult. And perhaps that's explained by my looking for, this traditional, strong literature theme through it. And fantasy, by its very nature, can go anywhere it likes. But no, I think, to answer your question, my favourite genre, English female mystery writers. I love them, but they've got to be good.
Can you remember a time where something, suppose as a patron, has happened that's been out of the ordinary, like an incident, like a natural weather incident or something that's happened while you've been in the library where something
not
grand, someone marched in with like a marching band and marched past you?
I wish. Not really. Most of the libraries I've been to, because of the places I've lived, have been small, and they haven't been hit by any catastrophe. Sometimes, as in my professional life, challenging behaviour presents itself in the library. Libraries, by their nature, are free to the public. Anybody, and I repeat, anybody can enter a library. Once they enter, they are then, the Library Act then imposes on them certain conditions, but basically people bring their own challenging behaviours with them. And unfortunately, as mental health issues become more prevalent in the community, because people are living independently with these issues, they impose themselves on libraries as well. And it depends on how they're treated as to how the situation resolves itself. Yes, I suppose challenging behaviour from patrons, but no, as a patron, I haven't witnessed, I haven't been involved in terribly much. As a professional, a library professional, yes, I have.
Yep. Changes in the library service. Now, as a patron, and you've come in and borrowed your books, and you've come in on a certain day and you thought, wow, this is different.
Yes. I can't separate the changes from a patron's viewpoint and from a professional's viewpoint. They're the same changes. And the changes have been immense, immense change since when I began studying in 74. Immense changes. There is so much competition now for the traditional services in libraries. I don't have to go to a library to satisfy my information needs or my recreational needs. I can satisfy them outside of a library, but I can also satisfy them within the library if I so choose, and I believe that's been the biggest scenario. There have been physical changes in the clientele, the charging systems over the years, from those little cards in a packet to computer software, and the products have changed, and the professionalism of the staff has changed. The type of staff, the qualifications required, etc., has changed from when I was a child. So when I was a kid, I'd walk into a library as a patron, into a small brick building with a limited number of items. Silence prevailed. The staff was probably untrained. To today, where I walk into an open plan, technology focus, self-serve community hub, where the staff is all professional, and the clientele perhaps more demanding, and that's what we're dealing with today. Enormous change.
When did that silence sort of, you know, that silence thing, which probably still hangs over as a...
I hope not.
As a symbol of the library. When did that sort of leave? Did you notice when that was sort of no longer
here too? I did. I believe there's a correlation between the professionalism of the trade as opposed to the untrained staff, where they viewed the library differently. They started to perceive programming as an integral part of our library service. And if you're programming, or if you have ever done a kids show, any sort of show, any sort of talk, you know it's loud. It's loud. It's all inclusive, and so be it. That's what it's supposed to be. I believe that the my children's generation, which is, I think it's X, they were born in 74, 76, I believe that's Generation X. I believe it started with them, where they came into the library and they wanted to share with friends. They wanted to come into the library and sit on the internet together. This is in later years, of course. Sit on the internet together and show each other what they're doing, sit in groups doing their projects with perhaps a device or perhaps just books. And silence was not part of their lifestyle. They didn't go to many places where silence was imposed on them. You know, they didn't sit in a church for a service with grandma for 3 hours, you know, not uttering a word. They were used to a far more open environment, and that included chatting with their friends or sharing with their friends. And I think that was the shift. And I see that as incredibly positive.
Late 70s, early 80s.
Exactly. Yeah.
When did you start your library service?
Okay. I came back to Newcastle in 74 and realised I had no qualifications. It was quite a challenge. And again, because of my love of libraries and literature, I focused on that. And fortunately for me, that year, TAFE Newcastle started a diploma course in library science. I don't know that that's what it was called, but that's what it's called today. I approached the head lecturer and I said, look, I don't know whether I can do this course. Can I try a couple of units? And he said, no, sign up for the full time, give it a go. When I began my lectures, I was absolutely overawed by the calibre of the lecturers. We had Keith Cloughton, who wrote Reed's Mistake, Barry Mitchison, University of Newcastle, Gary Wilson, Lake Macquarie Library Manager, and I was very fortunate in that most of them offered me work, casual work, straight away in year one. So I went to work at the university, both at the Ocmulgee and the Huxley and at the TAFE Library. And then when I was ready for full-time work, Gary Wilson interviewed me and offered me a permanent position in 79 as branch manager of Windale. I had no idea where Windale was and had to drive out there to check out, one, how do I get there, and two, where is the library? And started my journey with Lake Macquarie, and it's been a fascinating and very, very gratifying journey.
Exciting times there when you have the unknown to face.
Yeah, exactly.
While you've been working with the library, there's been lots of technology changes.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the biggest, can you tell me what some of the biggest were that you saw? And I can imagine there would have been some major changes along the way.
Computerisation revolutionised libraries. In 1989, when we introduced the Dynex software to libraries, I thought I'd have to leave the library. I was ready to resign because I'd never touched a computer in my life. I had been working at that stage in libraries for over 10 years. I'd worked on the Newark charging system, photo charging, all these manual systems. And hey, I was doing really well. Why did we need to change? Computerisation came in 89. And I was trained to use the Dynex software system, and we have never looked back. It was the best thing that ever happened to libraries. The scope of our information retrieval went from queries which took a day to answer to retrieving information, complex queries, within 15 minutes. It has been the most amazing scenario, and I think it's been all for the best. I can't see any negatives in it whatsoever. So in 89 we introduced the Dynex charging system. A few years later, and I'm sorry, I have got the date here, but I can't remember offhand, the internet was introduced at Spears Point Library as a trial. It went well. Public access was then given at Spears Point Library.
So that was the first library out of the late Macquarie Libraries to get internet?
Yes, it was trialled out the front. And then the next step was the RFID technology. No, I tell a lie, we had the 3M system, which relied on a strip being placed, a magnetic strip and a magnetic gate. And then we had RFID introduced at a later date, and the self-charging, the self-loan stations, which have been such a blessing for staff because we don't have to scan as much and the incidence of RSI has diminished. And we have, can focus on something else. You know, you don't study for 5 years to check in and check out. You want to do something challenging, and checking in and checking out is not challenging, I can tell you right now. All of these innovations have allowed us to introduce an enormous range of products, e-products, that have just sustained the library. Had we not had those, we may as well have closed our doors, because the e-resources, including e-books, audio, e-magazines and e-music, have gone through the roof. People want them. This is what people are seeking, and we're on board with it. That's what we're offering them. Okay, there are people in the community, mainly the elderly and the disadvantaged, who struggle with the new technology. And again, that's our role, to assist them through a learning process, an education process, so they can then join the technology community. They don't have to do it on a huge level, but they can have the advantages of email, internet searches, the simple searches, and also downloads, so that they can participate in using the e-resources from their home and travelling with the e-resources.
We seem to have come a long way in a short space of time. So, because we're talking, you know, mid to late 80s.
89, we introduced the Dynex software system. 89.
So there was cards before that one?
We did have what was called a photo charging system, and that was based on cards, but you filmed the loan.
The loan.
And then we did have a multitask system. Unfortunately, it was very restricted because our funding was restricted at the time. So we bought a system that perhaps, to give it its due, was too small to accommodate us, and it failed. But Dynex was the first successful charging system that we bought in 89. Yes. So
that's not, well, it doesn't feel that long ago.
It was not, no.
Moving along to activities and celebrations that we have in the library, what sort of activities do we do here in Lake Macquarie that are probably the major ones that we like to share with our community?
We've had the minor celebrations. We're good at celebration in the library. We're good at celebrating our 50th anniversary. We're good at celebrating our milestones. We're good at celebrating birthdays. We're good at celebrating people's retirements. I think when you, and with all deference to my interviewer, I think when you're dealing with a predominantly female staff, women celebrate well. If you look through society, whenever you have a celebration, or look to your own family, women drive celebration. They hold the traditions and they celebrate the traditions. And we are predominantly female and we do it really well. And that is a great thing because it acknowledges what's happened. It acknowledges achievement. Yeah. And I think that's a very good thing. On a personal level, I celebrate and am very gratified. Perhaps in the old days, when we were doing reference queries through monographs, I would celebrate when I did a reference query that was so complicated it took me a day, but I got the answer. It was very satisfying. I celebrated when I sat with children at Windale and literally sat with them around a table and did their homework with them. because I remembered how difficult it was to do homework without parental support. And every afternoon the group got bigger and bigger and bigger, and we sat around a table and I drove the homework help on my own. There was no other staff in the branch. It was just me. That was so gratifying. I don't know whether that achieved anything, but at least in my own small way, I celebrated that the fact that the children came in and were comfortable enough to come into me and do that. I think perhaps my greatest celebration was when I taught a lady, a patron. She was European background, to use the internet. She came in with no internet skills. This was some years ago, quite a few years ago. No internet skills whatsoever. I started her through the introduction to the internet, then got her onto more complex internet queries, etc. Unbeknownst to me, she was searching for her son, from whom she'd been parted post-war in Europe. She used the internet, and I think I'm going to cry. She used the internet to find her son in the United States, and they were reunited. And that started with an introduction to the internet lesson at Spears Point Library. She came back in person to tell me that story, and as you can imagine, I turned into a massive quivering jelly because I was so emotional. But can you imagine my sense of satisfaction and my celebration at that? That is what I believe we can do. That's a celebration.
That's a fantastic story. And
it is.
And that's what libraries do offer. If you can take the time to find out what the community needs and what they're doing.
Exactly.
And just going back to that classroom setting at Windale, the library worker, assistant, whoever, whatever role you hold, becomes the educator, the welfare person, the social.
Well, you've hit
helper,
the nail on the head, because
geography, English, maths, it's the information hub is what you can share with kids to adults.
Exactly. And that is gratifying. That is a celebration.
You get that warm feeling inside when you know that you've helped someone.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
That's excellent. So it's more than just about book week.
Oh, and more and more as the years go on, it's less and less about books. And a lot of people find that, and a lot of people are sad about that. And rightly so. If books are their passion, as they are for me, it is sad to see, not the demise of the book, but the lessening of importance of the book and the focus on technology. But I think we can embrace both. I think we can have both.
What is your vision of the future library? So we're moving at quite a pace.
Yes.
There always seems to be some sort of change. Some changes are small, and we can go with the flow without losing too much sleep. And like you said, there can be big changes with the computer, and I'm sure that many people have seen some sort of introduction of change into their workplace where they think, oh my God, can I handle this challenge and continue to do this? And the resilience, especially of our library workers, to combat those challenges and not only deal with them, but embrace them and use them really well. That is a big...
Well, I believe you've answered the question. I believe you've answered the question. The vision for the future, in one word, change. Change. We must be flexible in our attitude to accommodate community needs as they change. So we can't be rigid and say books are our life, we're never giving up books. We have to bend, and we're basically bending on a daily basis, because if someone comes in with a need, and that need is something outside of something, your familiar zone, you have to deal with it. You can't say no, go away. They want that information, or they want to be referred to that information. You have to deal with it. So you have to be flexible enough, and that's where professionalism comes in. You have to be flexible enough and well-trained enough to go with that and deal with it. And it's hard. It's difficult. And I can imagine, I'm 64, but I can imagine if you've been in this system for as long as I have, sometimes that's the challenge. The challenge is, no, this isn't what I do, but it is. Today, this is what we do. This is us. We have redefined ourselves to be this, and that's what we're going with. Online services are booming as a reflection of society generally. So if you go into a classroom today, there's no blackboard. There's an interactive whiteboard. The children may have a tablet or a laptop. This is the world today. Online services, as the retail sector found to their detriment, is what people want. If we don't go along with that, we've lost the plot. Online services are booming. Let's build up our online services. But as opposed to that, I get back to myself as a child. I still feel promoting reading is a core purpose for the library, a core function for every staff member. So yes, technology is great, but if the kid can't read what's on the screen, they've lost the ball game. Promoting reading is a core function, and we must never forget that, and we must still implement programs. I don't care if they're online, but we must still implement programs that promote reading, because that is a core function. Free access to information has always been the basis of the library service, always. It's in our charter. It's in Australia, in the Library Act, free access to information. So if people can't access that information, we have to show them how. We have to be the expert help to show them credible sites. That is how we offer free access to information. And drawing the community together, bringing the community together. Today, the shopping malls are taking the place of the church community or the local club or other community hubs. People gather in malls. How tragic is that? Where consumerism is the ultimate goal. Why can't the library be the place that draws the community together? And guess what? It doesn't cost you anything. The philosophy behind it is far more altruistic than going to the mall to have a coffee with your friend. Well, come to the library, you can have a coffee, you can go to the gallery and have a look at some beautiful artwork or whatever. You can come into the library, you can do some downloads, charge your phone or whatever, borrow some books for the kids, be the community hub, draw the community in, and it's all free of charge. I'm excited about these possibilities.
Should there be one little spot left for the classic books?
What's a classic? What is a classic? Your classic and my classic are different. So you may choose 100 classical books, and I'll choose another 100. I just don't get that. I know that it's a big thing with many people. We should have the classics in a collection. I don't know what a classic is, because I can point you to a book which was published perhaps 5 years ago, which I consider a classic. You've probably not read it. Who's to say I'm right and you're wrong? I don't know. So it's very subjective, and I really don't think we should buy into that argument.
Okay. Susan Grant, it's been lovely talking to you.
Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for sharing your knowledges and experiences.
Pleasure.